pressure. And I think that's what needs to happen. This is a long, long fight. This is not something that, you know, is supposed to be won next year or even, you know, before Barack Obama leaves office.
Ta-Nehisi Coates will link to the cover story for The Atlantic called The Case for Reparations, as well as part one of our interview with him at democracynow.org. That does it for our show. I'll be speaking at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center in Washington, D.C. tomorrow, May 31st, Saturday at 2 o'clock. Hope to see folks there. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Berkner, Nick Feltzauer, my Tony Amrich, Shake, Steve Martinez, Sam Alcoff, Honey Masood, Robbie Karen, Dina Gozder, Amy Littlefield. Special thanks. Happy birthday, Angie Karen. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
This is WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for a public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. My name is Jay Koronek. I'm station advisor here at WHFR.fm, the station making waves, coming to you from Henry Ford College. Yes, the college is closed for the spring and summer, but while we do all kinds of fix-up and paint-up activities around here, and it's very busy on campus in terms of our maintenance staff and technicians, but we are here, of course, 24/7 with you. And happy to be here. Okay, well, of course, the new WHFR Journal is local news and alternative views. And today, of course, was the kickoff of the season for the Farmers and Artisans Market here in Dearborn, the Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market. It started at 9 a.m. this morning. And so technically, if you're listening to our live broadcast and you're very close to West Dearborn, they'll still be there until 2 o'clock. Okay, until 2 o'clock today. They had a lot of big events today, and they will, of course, every week have a number of things. Like 10 a.m. this morning, there was a ribbon-cutting ceremony that I believe Mayor O'Reilly was at, because he cuts ribbons very well. The Dorsey Dueling Chefs at 10:15. 11 a.m. this morning was the Detroit Farm and Garden Workshop. Yeah, this time of year, usually a lot of plants, a lot of flowers that you could buy for your yard. And some shrubbery, too, as well as, of course, the usual food and jewelry and baked goods and meats and cheese. Oh, my goodness. Fresh salsa, handmade soaps, woodworking, popcorn, special sauces, pet treats, and special activities for the kids. At 1 o'clock right now, there's the Fairlane Club sushi demonstration. Oh, my goodness. And today, at least, there were five different food trucks there: the Shimmy Shack, Treat Dreams, Binky's Hot Dogs, they're a staple every year, Concrete Cuisine. I wouldn't say that Binky's has a food truck, they have a food cart, but nonetheless. Concrete Cuisine and Pazzalolo's Gelato, which, for those that don't know, gelato is a form of Italian ice cream, or maybe something else. It's icy. It's like ice cream. Is it a sorbet? Well, anyway, go and check that out. Now, every week there'll be a somewhat different variety of vendors and activities going on, of course, as the different local crops start coming in of one sort of produce or another. Then one week might be more of one sort, and the next week, whatever is coming in next, the most fresh things you can get at a local market like this, but you can't expect to get it the same thing every week, because that's not the way food grows, okay? So, my grocery store always has strawberries. Yeah, and they're shipped from Chile. Yeah, South America. So that's an inexpensive ecological sort of thing, isn't it? And you wonder, how do they stay so fresh all the way from Chile? Do they, or Ecuador sometimes too. I've seen strawberries from Ecuador there. Do they have refrigerated airplanes? It certainly doesn't come by truck or train. That would, you know. Of course, that kind of food usually is treated with pesticides, and it's usually treated with color additives to make it look nice and fresh and ripe, when in fact it might not really be of that sort. So local produce is good for a lot of reasons. You probably know these things if you're listening to this show regularly. By the way, it's co-sponsored by Oakwood Hospital, Henry Ford College, Bangkok 96 Restaurant. They're a new full-fledged market sponsor. Dearborn Area of Chamber of Commerce, of course, because they use part of their sidewalk and the restrooms are inside the chamber building there if you need to make a pit stop, as they say. And, of course, City of Dearborn helping provide the parking lot facility, as usual. So that's at the corner of Michigan and Mason behind the historic Bryant Library. That's also the parking lot, and this is not a plug, but of Buddy's Pizza, just a landmark, folks. So every Friday from now on, from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., all the way through October 17th, it's the Dearborn Farmers, Artists, and Artisans Market. Their website is Dearborn Farmers, Artisans Market. So there's no and in there or dash or anything. Dearborn Farmers, Artisans Market. And you can, I believe, even give them your email so that you'll get the update on what's coming up each Friday. If you go to Dearborn Farmers Artisans Market.com. And on with, let's see what's also relevant here. I get this email, and sometimes it's relevant and usually not, from history.com. And one of the emails you can get from them is This Day in History. So every day you get an email telling you what you missed in the past. Or maybe you remember if it wasn't too far back. They claim the most important thing about May 30th was way back in 1431. Joan of Arc was martyred at Rouen in English-controlled province of Normandy. That's northern France. Joan of Arc, the peasant girl, became the savior of France, leading their armies, a woman, without military training or other background, leading the armies of France successfully against other countries, intruders. She's burned at the stake for heresy. Okay, you can look that up. Sad story. Of course, she claimed that God directed her in a vision to become a warrior and to lead the troops to victory in France. And I'm not sure, I don't remember now exactly what her heresy was. I guess they just assumed in the church, as they still seem to do today to a certain extent, maybe not Pope Francis himself, but that women can't possibly get visions from God. You know, it's only men. Seems to be that way since women can't become priests. They can't possibly get a vision from God. Now, of course, I doubt, as a pacifist, that God would direct anyone to kill someone else. That's not the God that I could accept if I accepted a God. Okay, well, let's see what else here. Interesting, American Revolution in 1806, patriot and future president Andrew Jackson, who was considered kind of a wild guy as president, he kills Charles Dickinson in a duel. And the background in that story is interesting, I thought. His wife, President Jackson's wife, Rachel, he wasn't president at the time, I don't believe. In any event, his wife, Rachel, it was discovered, had married another man earlier in her life, but the marriage wasn't actually dissolved. Okay? And so a lot of people, including apparently Charles Dickinson, claimed that she was a bigamist and said bad things about Rachel. So Jackson challenged Dickinson to a duel, and they both traveled all the way to Kentucky to do it because at that time in 1806, it was legal to have a duel in Kentucky. Yep, and Jackson killed Dickinson. I believe Jackson was a military man, and he probably knew his way around a saber and a pistol pretty well. Anyway, of course, in 1911, May 30th, the original Memorial Day, well, going back quite a ways anyway, the first Indianapolis 500 was held. And it became sort of a tradition, and now, of course, it's going to be Memorial Weekend whenever that falls, if the 30th doesn't fall on a Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. So that's over and done with. And let's see here, any other exciting thing? Oh, yes, this is very important. Well, Christopher Marlowe, and Marlowe in England in 1593, he was considered perhaps the actual author of many of Shakespeare's plays. Of course, not those after 1593, because, he was killed in a tavern brawl. So there's a cautionary tale. And in music, oh my goodness, Leslie Gore sings her hit song, It's My Party, on American Bandstand, that ABC TV show with featured Dick Clark, brought him to fame. So, in honor of not Andrew Jackson, but Leslie Gore, here's that song. I know you want to hear it now that I've mentioned it. Leslie Gore from 1963, It's My Party. The 1960s, what a time. I was in high school then. That song had an absolutely classic sequel song. In it mentions that Judy is partially to blame for her crying. And so the follow-up song was, and now it's Judy's turn to cry. And it has almost the same melody and the same rhythm. And again, it was a big hit. It was her second big hit after It's My Party. And where is Leslie Gore today? Wasn't she in a sci-fi movie with Tiffany? Oh my goodness. In any event, we're moving on here. Yes, to local news and alternative views. Now you know what happened this morning and in history. So we'll turn to the papers. Well, first I'm going to turn to the Arab American News, which is available here at Henry Ford Community College for free in our student center, and probably is at Dearborn's Ford K-12 Community and Performing Arts Center. They have a newspaper section, so it's probably there free. They call themselves the Arab American News is the only Arab American newspaper featured at the museum. That's right, the newseum, whatever that means. But they do, their subheading is the Arab American News brings the Middle East to the Midwest. And so there's a lot of international news that you can't really find, well, not in the Press and Guide or Times Herald, that's not their purpose, of course, but even in the Detroit News and Free Press, and certainly there are points of view that are not necessarily the same as other sources. This story, I believe we mentioned, because it's a sad story, but this is their editorial opinion from the Arab American News from May 24th through 30th. So there's a new edition coming out tomorrow, probably, of the Arab American News, somewhere around the Dearborn community, of course. Well, the editorial opinion is, State Environment Chief's reckless decision puts the health of residents at greater risk. Yeah, we're talking about Severstal here in Dearborn. But I just thought you'd like to hear their opinion. Residents in Dearborn South End and neighboring communities, including Southwest Detroit, will suffer the consequences of Michigan Department of Environmental Quality, those letters are MDEQ, Air Quality Division, that's AQD, Chief Vincent Helwig. Helwig is his last name. His reckless, they say, decision to approve a revised emissions permit that allows one of the state's largest polluters to release higher levels of toxins into the air. For decades, families in the area have lived amid a dangerous level of pollution. State Representative Rashida Tlaib, who represents residents in Southwest Detroit, says one out of four children in the area has asthma. It is one of Michigan's most polluted zip codes. The revised emissions permit, approved by Helwig, allows Severstal to release toxic pollution such as lead, carbon dioxide, carbon monoxide, and PM10, which is fine dust, to be 2, 3, or 4 times previous amounts, or an increase of more than 7,200%. So write that down. Think about that. 7,200% of an increase in pollutants. The most disappointing part of Helwig's decision is that he made it nearly 2 months after he personally witnessed emotional testimonies from residents begging not to have the permit approved because the pollution was already too unbearable. He should have known better, says the Arab American News editorial opinion. He was educated about the respiratory problems and other health conditions caused by the pollution that some residents say have become fatal in some cases. He also approved the permit despite knowing about Severstal's long history of failing to comply with policies established to regulate pollution. Since 2008, the AQD has issued 37 violation notices to Severstal as a result of citizen complaint investigations, inspections, visible emissions monitoring, and stack testing. The AQD Detroit District Office referred the company for escalated enforcement action in July 2010. 4 years ago. We expect the MDEQ to advocate on behalf of residents, not against their best interests. The MDEQ inarguably failed in its mission to protect people from environmental hazards and at the same time lost the community's trust. Reports have surfaced that the Michigan Economic Development Corporation worked for months with Severstal as the company lobbied the MDEQ for permission to release even higher levels of pollutants and avoid current air quality regulations. As we have reported before, there are several other polluters in and around Southwest Detroit, and Severstal is not solely responsible. There are families living in the south end of Dearborn and Southwest Detroit who are underserved. Breathing clean air should be a right, not a privilege. I think it's a general expectation, right, folks? I hope. We understand jobs. This is the Arab American News going on. We understand jobs may have been at risk if the permit wasn't passed, but that is not more important than human lives. When families in the area head to the polls to vote in the gubernatorial election this November, they will remember where Governor Rick Snyder's administration stood on this issue. Many families in the South End are Arab Americans. How can Governor Snyder expect to earn the vote of our community when he did not stand on the side of sick Arab children impacted by the pollution? For years, residents have united together to fight the pollution. Now, after the passing of the permit, the fight is stronger than ever. than ever. Many have filed lawsuits against Severstal in the wake of the controversy, and sources tell the Arab American News a suit could also be filed against the MDEQ soon. Too many parents have been hurt watching their children develop chronic diseases because of the pollution. It is something they had no control over, but the MDEQ did have control over allowing the pollution to increase. To Vincent Helwig and others in support of the permit's passing, we ask, what if these were your children? And that's the opinion of the Arab American News in their current issue. Of course, all the opinions expressed on this show, the new WHFR Journal, are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College. But we thank them for letting us express them. And there's many other stories here, too. Interesting story about climate change and corporate welfare. The basic opinion, I'll just summarize this. This is from a Kevin Carson, who's a fellow at the Center for a Stateless Society. Center for a Stateless Society. Means no states or no government. You can check that out at c4ss.org. In any event, his little turn on climate change is that, yep, it's there. Yep, we got to do something about it. But government should not do it the way they have been trying to do it. He says we're supporting all kinds of polluting things, like, for example, car culture and long-distance transportation. Yep. Interstate highways. The government puts money into that. And it causes cars and big trucks to burn a lot of fuel and pollute our atmosphere all over the whole country, an awful lot. And only the oil companies are making a profit on that. They're not putting back into the budget anywhere for healthcare or anything. It's very interesting, and I can't share the whole article with you, but it's an interesting point of view, is that government should sort of shift focus to the more general and all-abiding problems right now of what we're doing wrong in our society to help pollute the society. Sure, we glory in interstate highways, except those in Michigan that are in bad repair, along with our regular roads, too. It's the bridges in Michigan I'm particularly suspicious of. Nonetheless, there's a lot of things government can do, and some things are, punitive rather than positive. And I just think it's an interesting article. It's in the Arab American News this week, as well as all kinds of stories about the usual news. You could almost say this free newspaper would replace your need to read anything about international news, except, of course, the stories are often with a point of view that is not the same as the other papers. So I always recommend, personally, I recommend reading as many different kinds of newspaper stories, even newspaper sources, even if the stories are the same. Yep. By the way, that Newseum, the paper is the only Arab American publication on display. It is an exhibit in Washington, D.C. So it's a museum all about the news. And this new exhibit tells the story of the Arab American News as a pioneer newspaper serving Arab Americans. So there's something to see the next time you're in Washington, D.C. It's called the Newseum. New for news, and then EM for museum. That's easy to forget. Okay. Interesting story based in Dearborn here. Selling cars from home is a growing illegal trend among Arab Americans. So don't do that. It shows certain people's homes, their home property here in Dearborn, and they got cars all over it, like cars for sale. And people come by and they can avoid having to pay property taxes, rent, and state fees required if they were to obtain a place of business permit, which probably wouldn't be allowed in a residential neighborhood either. And maybe even the purchases would be like cash, which means there's no taxes paid. Well, there's crackdown happening. And so don't do that. Don't be part of it, folks. Okay. So I find it fascinating. I'm only halfway through the paper here. I just picked it up this morning at our HFCC Student Center. Again, the campus is closed on Fridays until we begin the fall semester, although Henry Ford Community College is here fixing up the place, the buildings and the facilities, and like they do every year this time, because there aren't a lot of people here. So they can get right in and tear out ceilings and rip up electricity and so on. But it seems to be a very good paper. A very good effort, and I see half of it is not in English. Okay, I have to pass that over, but half of it is. Highly recommend that. Let's take an opinion here from Jim Hightower, our friendly, nationally known populist. Here's Jim Hightower's commentary.
Did you scramble to get your taxes done this year, dashing to the mailbox at the last minute? Yeah, me too. I really don't mind paying what I owe, but I hate having to pay the taxes owed by the likes of J.P. Morgan Chase, Mitt Romney, Exxon, and Amazon. They're just a few of the astonishingly profitable corporations and super-rich financial hucksters who walk their tax tabs each year, thus putting the cost of everything from the military to our national parks onto our shoulders. We constantly hear CEOs and their congressional hirelings wail about the punishing tax rate of 35% assessed on corporate profits. But they're grinning as they're crying, for they know they actually pay nowhere near that. In fact, the latest assessment by the Government Accountability Office found that U.S. corporations pay an average tax rate of only 12.6%, forcing workaday taxpayers to cover the multiple billions of dollars that these privileged elites dodge. How do they do that? Simple. They duck through ridiculous loopholes in our tax laws. How ridiculous? Try the subsidy for corporate criminals. If you get a speeding ticket, do you get to deduct the fine from the income tax you owe? Ha, just try it. But J.P. Morgan Chase was fined more than $20 billion last year for major frauds and consumer ripoffs, and his honchos have now deducted that punishment from the corporate tax bill, claiming it as a cost of doing business. Oh, they also get to deduct the many millions of dollars they paid lawyers to defend their blatant wrongdoing. This is Jim Hightower saying, well, sniff the elites, we're merely making rightful use of the deductions allowed by tax laws. But it's their lawyers who wrote those laws to legalize their thievery. And need I mention that they also get a deduction for the mega salaries and expenses of those lawyers? So we pay for their wrongdoings, their fines, and their lawyers.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
Jay Kornick here with you for the May 30th, 2014 edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views. Here's an upcoming cultural note, a couple weeks away. 2 weeks, I think. 3 weeks? Okay. Anyway, opening June 19th and running through June 29th here at Henry Ford College, our Humanities and Social Sciences division will be presenting Neil Simon's play, Fools. Now, Neil Simon himself, he grew up in a poor neighborhood during the Great Depression. In order to escape troubles at home, he would take refuge in movie theaters. He has said that these early experiences inspired him to become a writer. And, of course, his famous plays that have been performed in theater and made into movies, The Odd Couple, Barefoot in the Park, The Sunshine Boys, The Good Doctor, Laughter on the 23rd Floor, Lost in Yonkers, and Rumors, among many, many others. He's won the Tony Award, New York Drama Critics Circle Award, and Pulitzer Prize for Drama. He's also branched out into film and television, writing skits and screenplays, earning several Emmy and Oscar nominations. So this play is about an ambitious young schoolteacher whose name is Leon Tolchinsky. He's found his dream job in a tiny, idyllic Russian village. Upon arrival, he discovers the entire town has been under a spell of stupidity for 200 years, and he is the only one who can break the curse. What Leon doesn't know is that if he stays over 24 hours and fails to free the village's inhabitants, he too will fall victim. To further complicate matters, he has fallen in love with a village girl, one who is so stupid she has only just learned to sit down. Fools has been described as a comic fable. This play is entitled Fools. It's been described as a comic fable, one that entertains whilst imparting the lesson that people are only as stupid as they think they are, and that if they refuse to believe that, then anything is possible. So there's a cautionary tale, a great morality play. Certainly in college, we don't think if you are stupid, you should stay stupid. So we give you a lot of experiences, a lot of knowledge, and hopefully you'll be able to think your way out of your previous lack of knowledge. Okay, so anyway, that sounds like a very fun experience. It's going to be at 8 p.m. Thursdays through Saturdays with matinees on 2 p.m. on Sundays, and it does not start until June 19th. So next Friday is the 5th, I think. No, 6th. And so it's a week from next Thursday. Yes? Maybe not. No, 2 weeks from next Thursday. I'll get it. Calendar. Okay. 2 weeks from next Thursday. So just we'll keep mentioning here WHFR. Of course, tickets are $10 for general seating, $8 for students with an ID. You can even make a reservation. Visit theater.hfcc.edu and click on the Buy Tickets link. If you want to jump in there, this is the official press release, and it's happening now. Again, the website is theater.hfcc.edu. Click on the Buy Tickets link. We got another theater story coming up a little bit later. Let's not forget Yalla Eat, Arabic for Let's Go Eat. It's a unique culinary experience offered by the AANM, that's the Arab American National Museum, a guided walking tour along Woodward Avenue in East Dearborn. Participants will learn how Arab Americans begin to revitalize the shopping district in the early 80s, turning vacant storefronts into a thriving cultural retail designation. You'll also explore the diverse cultural offerings of Arab and Middle Eastern food businesses along Warren Avenue. Admission is free, but you've got to register online, okay? And there's only 15 slots for each day. But tomorrow's already at capacity. Saturday, May 31st was sold out a couple weeks ago. So where do you go online? It's ArabAmericanMuseum.org. That's a Yalla Eat. That's Y-A-L-L-A, capital E-A-T, exclamation mark, Yalla Eat culinary walking tours. I think if you're going to do all that walking, the least you can do is get some food along the way, right? And you can even buy some other things, too. Opportunities to shop are offered at each stop. A great idea. Certainly a lot of tourists to this area, but also a lot of people who don't live in the East Dearborn area. By all means, probably would want to be part of that. And I see that it's scheduled for Tuesday, June 3rd, Saturday, June 7th, Tuesday, June 10th, Saturday, June 14th, and maybe there'll be more if they're popular. And again, it's only 15 people at a time. It's hard to keep a group of 15 together. I know if you have to walk along with a guide, but Yalla Eat, ArabAmericanMuseum.org. Okay. That's not all. There's much, much more here. Let's jump back to last Sunday's Press and Guide, Dearborn Press and Guide. I think we mentioned before on the show, we had a special Memorial Day show last week. Very sad that the body of the missing student was found in the Rouge River. Yes, he died. Yes. That's usually what they mean when they say they found the body. They didn't find a living person. Turns out that Xianru Du was a doctoral candidate from Canada studying at University of Michigan Dearborn. And he apparently went into the water to assist a fellow student who was already in the water and needed help. That person was able to pull themselves out. That was a female person. She was a 23-year-old Dearborn Heights resident. But it was not for until they found her 100 yards south of where they were initially seen in the water. So just think about that. She's flailing around and trying to get out, and 100 yards later, she was able to get to the shore. So Xianru Du jumped in to try to save her, and unfortunately didn't survive the rescue attempt. And the cautionary tale here, folks, is that the Rouge River due to stormy weather, has very, very strong current. That water is just really going fast. And people don't, even people who live in this area, don't necessarily understand that. And it's hard to see how fast it's really running. It's not like huge waves or anything. But, I mean, there's evidence, if you know, ripples here and there about how fast it's going. But it is, and it's not shallow either. So, and also I assume that the sides of the banks are not easy to climb out of. I once drowned in a creek in Arizona. Almost drowned. I did not drown, but I almost drowned. It was very close to it, and it was only 6 inches of water. I fell, and I could not get up. I wasn't an old person. I was young. All the rocks had moss on them. The rock bed moss, which is extremely slippery, it turns out. Couldn't get a handhold. Couldn't get my feet to get a firm grip on anything. So can you imagine the scene? Imagine the story. He died in 6 inches of water. You know, how embarrassing for an epitaph. But seriously, you know, it's not easy to pull yourself out of a natural stream because the moss and the riverbanks are not intended for climbing out of, okay? That's not nature's way to make it good for people to climb out of them. So it's very dangerous. So if you're over at the woods behind University of Michigan Dearborn, the Ford Mansion, the woods are still open. The mansion is not open, but you can get in and still walk on the nature pass on the wooded area, and you can get down to the Rouge River. Don't go in the water. Don't go near the water, okay? It is extremely dangerous, especially right after storms when it goes very, very fast. Even if you can swim. I mean, they said, you know, they put divers in, professional divers with scuba gear and that, and they have a hard time. They had a hard time searching the river and getting in and out. And they're professional swimmers with all that equipment. And it was very difficult. It took several days to find the body, in fact, because it did travel pretty far down the Rouge River, but I think they found it near Michigan Avenue in the Rouge. But still, that was hundreds of yards south of where they were both sighted having this incident. So stay away from the Rouge River, especially after a big storm. Don't fall in. Okay. Also, District 7, that's in Dearborn Heights. That's not the movie District 9 about aliens on this planet who were kept really imprisoned. Anyway, District 7 in Dearborn Heights will keep buses for younger students. Big decision. They will continue to bus resident elementary students next year, even after the superintendent suggested the service could be cut to save money. You want the elementary kids to walk. How far away do the kids have to walk to get there? I just went past an elementary school just east of Fairlane Town Center here in Dearborn yesterday. Must have been 10 buses. Now, it's a huge school. Huge elementary school, but 10 buses, that's a lot of kids. And they all go a different direction, so they must come from miles and miles away. Now, of course, here's the story, typical story from an older person. I lived always at least a quarter mile for junior high school, but then high school, I lived, I think it was about 7 or 8 miles. That on my bicycle, pedaling as fast as I could go, it took 45 minutes. We didn't have buses in those days. Where did I live? Okay, Flat Rock, Michigan. But that's still in Wayne County, and that's, you know, we know what a car is. And kids didn't expect to have buses. Parents didn't expect to drive their kids themselves if there wasn't buses. Kids got exercise. They would walk in groups. There would be safety patrol at each corner. They would ride a lot of bicycles. And, you know, yeah, I rode my bike. You say, well, what about bad weather? I rode in the rain. I rode in 6 inches of snow with my bike. Learned to balance pretty well on icy, snowy sidewalks because you couldn't ride in the street. It wasn't legal then. And, of course, it was dangerous if the cars were slipping around, too, and sliding. So I'm not so sure this is a great trend to have 9 million buses Maybe the District 7 superintendent might be onto something here. But by the way, those buses mustn't be very many. It only costs $36,000 or so dollars a year to bus students. And it used to be 175 students using the bus, and now the number's fallen to 120. Are they just losing students, or are the students deciding to walk, or the parents deciding to drive them themselves? I don't know. Of course, parents have threatened action here if they lost the buses. They threatened to enroll their students, their children elsewhere, even though the district schools would still be the closest. And but the superintendent says, if you drive your kid elsewhere, it's going to be farther than driving to Bedford. So there, residents. I think the residents and the kids are just being kind of wimpy about it. I do agree in the exercise and the... Yes, it takes a little time. And yes, bad weather you have to dress up for. You have to plan ahead. But live in the environment, folks. Don't live in a cocoon. That's my humble opinion, of course, and probably that of no one else. Kind of agree with the superintendent on that one, even though it's only $36,000, but it's only 120 students that are even involved at this point. Okay. Craig Ferran, you should read from last Sunday, which was Memorial Day weekend. His editorial is, End to Human Conflict Will Be the Best Memorial Day. So I am totally in agreement with that. He quotes a lot of famous people like George Santayana, Benjamin Franklin. Franklin, for example, said, there was never a good war or a bad peace. And that's got to mean something, right? Got to mean something. Cautionary note here. Motorcyclist in critical condition after hitting a pothole in Dearborn Heights. A pothole on Beach Daily, in Beach Daily Road or on Beach Daily Road, south of Warren Road, caused an accident and left a 65-year-old man in critical condition. Stephen Hills of Redford Township was riding his motorcycle about 7:30 p.m. Sunday, a week ago Sunday, when he hit the pothole, according to WXYZ-TV. So this story came from television into the papers. He flew off the motorcycle after he hit the pothole, hit his head as he landed yards away. He's still in critical condition. And the comment from Dearborn Heights police officer, the gentleman was riding his motorcycle without a helmet, which is a big part of the problem. And the officer also said that the rider did indicates that the rider did nothing wrong since helmets are not required by state law, and he was driving at posted speeds. So two questions there. One, when will we resolve the pothole problem? Apparently a big survey of voters out there don't want to have their taxes raised to fix the potholes. Well, currently, revenues are such that the state legislature, the people you elected, claim that there isn't enough money to fix the roads the way they need to be fixed. And, of course, the state only fixes state roads. Local roads, residential roads, and so on, those are fixed by your local city. And how is their budget? How are their budgets doing? Not too well. So guess what? They need more money, too, from you, to fix the potholes. Now, people talking about state government, they say, oh, state government's spending money on all kinds of crazy things, and we don't need more taxes, we just need our roads fixed. Okay, you get elected to the legislature, you change their priorities then. Or you vote for some people, other than perhaps even Democrats and Republicans, that have a better idea of how to get the money to do these basic public services. As I mentioned, I believe, last week, Michigan is now known, and it's quite clear by all studies that have been done, we have the worst condition of highways and bridges in the United States of America. Say yes to Michigan as being number last. And, you know, if this pothole had been fixed, this man riding his motorcycle would have not hit it and flown off his bike. Of course, I think there should be a law, and he should have worn a helmet, even if there wasn't a law. I have a motorcycle riding endorsement. I rode a motorcycle for many years safely, never had an accident, always wore a helmet. Now, that was before it was even required. Why? Because when you fall off a bike, especially at certain speeds above like 2 miles an hour, the most damage that will be done to you is probably to your head and to your neck. So not to wear a helmet is absolutely insane, in my humble opinion. Oh, it's your right to die that way, I guess. But if you're immobilized for years, the healthcare costs are shared by all the rest of us. So thank you very much. Thank you for not thinking about the other people in society. And thank you for setting a bad example for other people, because it's just not safe. For years before Ralph Nader started on the seatbelt campaign in the 1960s, which was the right thing to do, anyone who was a race driver, race cars, Indianapolis or the Formula One cars in Europe on road race tracks, they always wore seatbelts when they were racing. And guess what? They had them optionally installed on their personal passenger cars. Why? They knew it was the safest way for them and their passengers and their families to ride in automobiles, even just going to the store or going out for dinner. Absolutely. In fact, they believed in the harness type. So seatbelts started just across your waist in the U.S., and then they became shoulder and seatbelts, because that shoulder strap, it's not perfect, not like shoulder straps which are come over each shoulder in a race car, but that's a recognition that you should not fly forward and hitch the steering wheel with your head either. and just keeping you belted into the seat is not enough. You need to stay away from the dash, the windshield, and so on. If you're belted in the seat, you probably won't hit the windshield, but that shoulder harness is absolutely essential. So I'm just saying, the people that do this professionally, I don't know any motorcycle racer that doesn't wear a helmet. They all do. And it's not a matter of speed or the danger. It's always dangerous on a motorcycle, always dangerous in a car. And by the way, it's always dangerous on a bicycle too. Get the appropriate helmet protection for the vehicle that you are in or you are riding in. Please. Now, someone who's 65 years old should know better, but maybe you thought, well, you only go around once and I'm old enough. That's sad if it's true, but his opinion is his opinion. International buffet lunches. We survived the first one here in the student center. I love talking about food. It is coming up on their next event, and that's going to be next Thursday, June 5th. It's going to be Hawaiian Polynesian cuisine. Yes. The restaurant will be serving cuisine from the Hawaiian Islands and will feature a hog roast. Always a big event in the islands, at least for the tourists anyway. Let's go have a luau and we'll roast a hog, also known as a pig. I think the Hawaiian dancing is probably the best part of the pig roast, but the pig can't appreciate it, of course. Anyway, for reservations or more information, you can simply call Henry Ford College's 5101 restaurant at 313-206-5101. Okay, easy to remember except for the 206 part. 313-206-5101. And you can check out the complete buffet menu and on schedule for the upcoming five or six buffets after this. So at least four buffets after next Thursday will continue on Thursdays. And, of course, it is during the day. And 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Okay. For some reason, on June 26th, they're starting at 10:30 a.m. I'm not sure about why that is, but... And it does cost, pay one price for every person. The buffet luncheon is $14 a person. And reservations are not necessary, but are recommended because there's a lot of people that come to those things here. They've been very popular for years and years. So reservations, 313-206-5101. International buffets at 5101 Restaurant at Henry Ford College in the Student Center. All right, continuing on, about 10, 12 minutes to go before Highway 61 with Joanne Kay here, Best in the Blues from 2 to 6 p.m., so stay tuned for that. City Council wraps up its workshops. I was going to try to find out today, but I got into the college and I see that our internet is down, so I cannot find out that way. I should have called City Hall. I assume last night that City Council approved the budget for the next fiscal year, which begins July 1st. The proposed city tax rate is 26.6 mils, and that's a 0.7 mil increase from the previous year, and is expected to remain at this rate for the 2015-16 and 2016-17 fiscal years. Previous budget year saw a 0.96 mil decrease. Interesting. It went down, then it had to go back up. Okay. The millage funds support the city's operating fund, library fund, garbage services, and combined sewer overflow debt. That's at $300-400 million project that isn't finished yet, that all of us taxpayers have to pay for. Okay. Let's see, taxable values, water rate, new sewer rate, and of course, the water rate is for 1,000 cubic feet of water is $20. That's the same rate as last year. But the new sewer rate will be $37.60, effective July 1st, which is up from last year's $36.50. Big dollar 10 cent increase. Labor contracts. City employees have accepted concessions to produce an overall 10% reduction in payroll-related costs. The city did add 16 full-time positions, including 7 firefighters funded by the merger of Dearborn-Melvindale departments and 8.86 part-time full-time equivalent additions. A full-time equivalent of 1.0 means that the person is equivalent to a full-time worker. Of course, part-time people don't get benefits. And I don't believe they do the job as well over the long term. Or with as high, well, we're talking about quality here, not necessarily quantity, but both, as a full-time person, it's always been my belief in that, especially in educational institutions, where part-time is the standard today. And I think that's, we have a lot of great part-time teachers, but if you look at how much time it takes them to teach a single class, they're making below minimum wage. And they've got a master's or a doctorate. And they're smart. And it's a tough job. Doing a good job educating. I know. I'm still doing it after 46 years. And I'm not doing it for the money because I probably had other options like engineering, science when I went to college. I was told that was those were my fortes. But I actually wanted to be a teacher. Can you imagine? Yeah, today there's not so many. Not so many people want to do that. The situation has changed greatly. It's a tough thing to be a teacher, especially in a underfunded district or facility. And to be part-time, which most teachers have to be, they're forced to be now. Also in the proposed budget, the city is appropriating here in Dearborn about $750,000 to the West Dearborn Downtown Development Authority. Whoa, $750,000. How will that spruce up West Dearborn? But East Dearborn did better. They got an even $1 million. Mm-hmm. Wonder what they're going to do with that $1 million. Anyway, a copy of the budget, which probably has now been approved last night, is available online at cityofdearborn.org. You have to click the transparency button on the left side of the homepage. And then FY 2015 budget to find all of the applicable documents. So if you don't know that transparency means this is where the budget is, then it's not very transparent, is it? I would hope there's a lot of information, under transparency, not just the budget. But it's not too easy to figure that out if it's the first time at the cityofdearborn.org website. Okay, looking at other news here. Let's see. Craig Ferrand, this Wednesday, in the Press and Guide, talks about Linkin Park. Rejected consent agreement was the known versus the unknown. There is still on the edge of emergency financial manager, and city council has turned down the consent agreement twice. And he's confused, as I am. But, of course, the whole emergency financial manager law, I believe, is illegal, that our legislature and our governor forced on us after we, the people, voted. We didn't want it that way. There was already an emergency financial manager on the books. We didn't want the state to have the right to come in whenever it said there was trouble and then appoint a petty dictator. These emergency financial managers have not, by the way, folks, the record is clear, made good decisions during their tenures. It's approaching a dozen cities in and out across the state of Michigan in the last 4 years. They haven't been gods. They haven't been doing perfect jobs. I'm not specifically referring to Kevin Orr here. But there's certainly things I would do differently in Detroit if anybody wanted to put me in charge, which I don't have the background for, sorry. So my opinion is not worth anything on that. But other people have said that emergency financial managers have made a lot of bad decisions. And there are some cities that one manager leaves, they go back to home rule, if you will, and then they need another manager in 2 years, according to the state. And the state can just go in anytime they want to. No official bankruptcy needed. If the state says you need to be taken over by us, it's going to happen. Get back to that later. Let's see what else is going on here. Downriver Actors Guild unveils its renovated. It's called Theater on the Avenue. It's in Wyandotte. And they've got a version of Jesus Christ Superstar. It's going to be one of their new productions there. And supposedly it's a really nice facility. It holds up to 200 people, which is a nice size for a small community theater. So that's in downtown Wyandotte. Okay. The Theater on the Avenue. It's probably right on, what, Biddle or 4th Street or something. I don't have that paper in front of me. I'm sorry. Okay. The Times-Herald from this last Wednesday has a guest editorial, as they usually do this time, from the Livingston Daily. And they point out how revenue estimates here in Michigan are really raising a question. Because I thought the state said a couple months back that they have a surplus. Remember, there was a discussion of giving you reduced taxes or everybody a check for $75 instead of fixing the roads. Well, the Senate fiscal agency pegs the decline now at $288 million. And the House fiscal agency says it could be as much as $422 million. So how can the Senate and then the House and their individual fiscal agencies see the influx of money to be so different, or the debt, approaching debt to be so different? It's only a difference of $150 million. That's more than just a pencil point, folks. So they ought to get their accountants to compare notes in our state legislature. Taking into account the Treasury Department's estimated drop, the state projects an official $317 million revenue shortfall from what it expected in January. So we don't have a surplus, folks, according to our legislature now. We don't have one at all. We've got a $317 million shortfall. And the Livingston Daily humorously called that a massive boo-boo, that shortfall. A massive boo-boo. Yeah. And it'll take an exceptionally large bandage to cover it, continuing the metaphor there. So And what do we need money for? Well, road funding, of course. Where's that $1.2 billion that the governor said we need every year towards the upkeep of roads and bridges? Also because we're in such a mess, you know. Legislature has decided to spend an extra $450 million at this point, but it's not going to fix the problem. And it's not going to fix the problem next year or the year after. Right-to-work laws. These were rushed in. Supposedly, oh, tremendous number of businesses come in Michigan. We get a lot of tax dollars. Where is it? Hasn't happened yet. Taxing senior pensions. And I have to say to the governor, with all cynicism, thank you very much, governor and legislature, for taxing my state pension after I was already retired. Thanks a lump. You know, no Republican is going to get my vote because you were the folks that did it. You decreased the taxes on businesses. Well, where's the business growth that came from that? And you took, in some cases, 10% away from seniors' pensions. So thanks a lot. That really helps the quality of life, and it helps us to not spend any extra money to help the Michigan economy if we don't have it. You follow? Okay. Tax relief for homeowners. Segments of the legislature have advocated for higher limits on homeowner tax breaks. It's not a bad idea, says the Livingston Daily. However, we're not proceeding in that way. So we've got a big deficit, and somebody's to blame for that. And the business plans hasn't really worked that the legislature and the governor has been tried. So what's going to happen in November? The Livingston Daily Press in Argus concludes in the Dearborn Times-Herald for this week. Right now, the powers that be in Michigan government ought to huddle their wagons and figure out their stances. Of course, they did pass a minimum wage law increase here in Michigan that'll take effect in a while, and there's cost of living added to it. But it's only like $9.25 an hour to start with. And guess what? If cost of living would have been applied the last time we had an increase to minimum wage, it should now be around over $20 an hour. That's how much cost of living has increased since the last time that $7.25 was put in place. So thank you for cost of living, but we're already about $13 below where we should be. And no, it's not a job killer. I'm sorry, Republicans. You look at the facts of every time there's a minimum wage put in place nationally or individually by states. It did not kill jobs. It did not hurt business, even though, yes, businesses have to become smarter about how they use money. But remember, the whole system is better if more people who are workers get the money, they spend the money. They're desperate to spend it on food and housing, but even maybe small discretionary items, a little bit of traveling to tourist spots in Michigan. And of course, it only helps the whole total economy to get more money out there to the workers. Duh. And all the studies show that. And don't give me this old job killer stuff. Prove it. Prove it. Can't be proved. Okay, well, it's time to go. Thank you for listening to the new WHFR Journal.